Welcome to UN Calling Asia from the United Nations in New York. I'm Daniel Dickinson. Later in today's program, how can dialogue between different faiths help reduce poverty and new challenges for financial markets in Asia? But first, terrorist groups are actively recruiting fighters in Central Asian countries, according to a senior UN official in the region. The UN Regional Center for Preventive Diplomacy for Central Asia says it's working with governments to prevent groups like ISIL and the Taliban in Afghanistan from finding new recruits. Petko Dragunov is the director of the center, which is based in Ashgabat, the capital of Turkmenistan. Elena Vapnichnaya asked him about the threat of terrorist groups in the region.
We have four major themes of cooperation, and this is one of the most important areas where we try to assist the countries in Central Asia in building up capacities to withstand and to combat the spread of terrorism and violent extremism. We have an ongoing project that started several years ago. In 2011, member states signed a joint plan of action, which is very important, and we are now in the second phase of trying to acquire ownership by the countries in Central Asia of this project and fill it with contents. The countries in Central Asia are apparently offering grounds for recruitment by ISIL and other terrorist groups, and this is a matter of concern. One way to address the issue long-term, and I think there's a general understanding with the governments, and my meetings with government officials have been very productive in this, is that the countries of Central Asia have a vested interest in assisting Afghanistan and taking control and stabilizing the situation there. There's a number of infrastructure projects where Afghanistan can be very, very useful for the sustainable economic development of all of the countries in Central Asia.
The Center for Preventive Diplomacy in Central Asia, in a way, is a unique project. I don't know any precedent or anything similar to that. Do you think it has proved its effectiveness? Did it fulfill its role?
Oh, very much so.
Is it fulfilling its role?
I think so. There's no magic wands. But I do think that what this center does goes to the core of what the UN is all about. It is a much smarter investment if you try to prevent conflict and destruction and human suffering rather than, as we often do, go firefighting when it's already too late and then much of the damage has been done.
Petko Dragunov from the UN Regional Center for Preventive Diplomacy for Central Asia. The success of new global development targets requires people of all faiths to put aside their differences and work together. That's according to a participant at a UN-led interfaith meeting, which has been taking place in Bristol in the United Kingdom. The meeting brought together representatives from eight of the world's major religions to discuss how to lift people out of poverty. Later this month, the international community will finalise the Sustainable Development Goals, which will frame global development over the next 15 years. Siobhan Garside asked Saif Ahmed, CEO of the UK-based non-profit Al-Qaeda Foundation, about the importance of interfaith dialogue.
I think the all faith organizations should be part and parcel of any UN drive. I mean, 17 Sustainable Development Goals, very ambitious. It can only be achieved if you can inspire and empower all faith groups coming, working with organizations like Al-Khair Foundations, which is a Muslim faith-based initiative, but inclusive organization caring for the entire humanity, irrespective of their caste, creed, and color, and faith. So therefore, it is time for us all not to waste arguing with each other, but to go and work hand in hand to fulfill and achieve this ambitious goal. And this ambitious goal is achievable. It is within the human reach. It's not something, a figment of imagination. It can achieve them. But we need to work in coordination, in cooperation with each other.
Your organization, Al-Qaeda, works in countries such as Pakistan, Bangladesh, and Myanmar. Can you give a broad overview of how your work in these countries targets sustainable development goals such as poverty and gender equality?
I think our work is based on the WASH, maternal health and education and infrastructure. Both in Pakistan, we have established various primary, secondary schools where children cannot access education because of the poverty. We have created a series of livelihood programs. To date, you can say there are around 500,000 people from directly from shelter, food, water, and hygiene kits in our livelihood program. In Bangladesh, we have got a women empowerment program whereby we are giving them micro grants or WASH program even. Over 100 women is going through livelihood training in terms of entrepreneurship as well as some technical skills to achieve them. But again, these are all geared up to empowering individuals to achieve success.
And do you think that the use of interfaith dialogue will be more successful in some of the goals than others, or do you think they'll be challenging in any of them?
I think there is, to be honest with you, there is an increasing sense of purpose. Increasingly, faith groups are coming nearer to each other, literally realizing that the differences are so little, so limited, that the cooperation can bring a result.
Saif Ahmed talking to Siobhan Garside. Asia fared well throughout the global financial crisis of 2008 and has since become one of the strongest economic regions in the world, according to the International Monetary Fund, or IMF. But a new book published by the fund says that Asia's financial systems are facing new challenges. Jim Walsh works in the IMF's Monetary and Capital Markets Department and is co-author of The Future of Asian Finance. Bruce Edwards began by asking Mr. Walsh how markets in Asia differ from the United States and Europe.
They're different in some interesting ways. For one thing, Europe and America tend to have more sophisticated financial markets and more complex financial markets than we see certainly in the emerging markets in Asia. Asian financial institutions tend to be more focused on deposits and lending, what we think of as vanilla banking services, than particularly American and British banks, which have much more complicated funding systems and a wider range of products that are available and a wider range of activities that they engage in. This is changing in Asia as financial systems become more sophisticated and as the middle class grows across the region and demands increasingly complex and different financial services. But in general, Asian banks, while they tend to be large in many countries, they still tend to be much more conservative in their operations than banks in the advanced economies.
There seems to be a growing industry in the non-bank lending, commonly known as shadow banks. Is there an oversight issue there? Is it a problem to regulate this industry?
Non-bank finance is growing all over the world, and Asia is no exception. In the most sophisticated Asian economies, Japan, Hong Kong, and Singapore, this kind of non-bank finance might not have been as pronounced as it was in the U.S., but it's certainly an issue. In those countries, supervisors have been on top of this and continue to look at it. In the emerging markets, non-bank finance is also growing. We can see this most clearly with bond markets. Asian bond markets, for corporates especially, have really grown in the last few years. And this is an area where there is oversight and supervisors are aware of it, but that this is a relatively new thing and there's always room for more intrusive supervision and making sure that things are well managed. And China, of course, is where people tend to talk about shadow banking the most. And this is an area that's grown very rapidly in the last few years. But here, too, supervisors are aware of the risks and have tried to contain them over time. It's always an issue that financial markets are very innovative, and if you close one door, they'll figure out another one to open. And China has been no exception there.
In Asia, there are many countries that have an aging population. How will that affect the financial sector in the region?
We do see low birth rates and declining workforce in quite a few Asian countries, Japan, China, and eventually this will also affect Korea, Hong Kong, Singapore, and population growth rates are slowing everywhere. So what we tend to see in the aging societies is more of a demand for savings as people need to save more for their retirements, and in the future probably also more demand for insurance, life insurance in particular.
Jim Walsh, co-author of the book, The Future of Asian Finance. You've been listening to UN Calling Asia from United Nations Radio in New York. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Daniel Dickinson.